Hey, welcome back. I missed you guys. I hope this week has flown by for you. I know mine has not really gone by too quickly, but we're inching up to spring break for my kids. And if you're like me and you have to pack school lunches every morning, I cannot wait for next week, a whole week not having to do it. Hallelujah. Praise be to Cody Brown on a cul-de-sac. Now, I'm just going to quickly say thank you again for sticking with me in this transition to a weekly show. Trust me, it's hard for me to keep my thoughts in all week on these shows, but from purely a logistical standpoint, putting out 3 to 5 podcasts a week with a Patreon episode in there, it is a massive commitment when you aren't lucky enough to have a network doing your editing and producing, distributing it. So I won't bore you with the details, but really I need a life balance. And trust me, if there is a time that I can produce more podcasts per week, I will be the first to jump at it. Now, if you're still wanting more, head on over to patreon.com/realitybpod. I have some deep dives into reality stars, crazy real life stories that I can't really go into here on the public podcast. Things like former students, parents, being a surrogate for gay couples. And I also have recaps of some documentaries and other shows like Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, My 600-Pound Life, and coming up in 2 weeks, Real Housewives of New York. You better back it up because I'm going to make it nice. Okay, that was really terrible. So let's just head on into the big show. Now, I'm going to mix up the order this week. You know me, this is kind of a big thing for a type A asshole like myself. You know what? I never even really noticed that type A. Does the A stand for asshole? That would really be perfect. But with that, I don't know. What would type B be? B. Bitches. B. Bicuspid. I don't even know where that came from in my brain. I don't know. It's bicuspid. Is that a tooth? Okay, that doesn't fit. But okay, anyway, there was your deep thoughts with Jody Huff, brought to you by way too much caffeine this morning. So let's see if I can focus, reel it in, and let's hit up some Married at First Sight first. Okay, now I have some bones to pick this week with all three of the guys and the producers or editors, because there is some shady, shady business going on. Now, let's get to that in a moment, but first let's talk about our couples, Shaunice and Jeff D. We pick up where we left off last week. They've had that argument over Jeff D's phone. Now, he leaves the house, and last week we saw he zoomed off in his car. Or did we? Because all we see this week is Jeff D sitting in his car calling his friend. Now, thank God this friend is a good guy, and I think it's the same buddy who went on a double date with them last week, because he tells Jeff D basically he's being a little immature. He can't just run off and have a temper tantrum, and Shaunice is just trying to talk to you, man. That's what grown-ups do. That's what married people should do. Now, luckily, Jeff D didn't get all defensive like we know one of the other guys did when he got called out, but let's see what happened after this little fight. Jeff D got Shaunice 2 roses and left them out for her. Now, I was reading tweets, and Shaunice was kind of getting some shit for not being all gaga over these roses. Now, I'm not just saying this because I like Shaunice and Jeff D is still on my watch list, but I'm with her. I'm not a fan of flowers if they're the easy go-to thing that you pick up from 7-Eleven to say, I'm sorry. If you're sorry, you use your big boy words and you say, I'm sorry. Because after the second time of getting apology flowers, flowers don't mean anything. Now, am I bringing in my own personal experience to judge this situation? Absolutely. Do I still get apology flowers? Sometimes. That's because men are missing a critical piece of the inner ear, which allows them to receive vital information. All we need to take away from this argument is that Jeff D needs to, let's make Pastor Cal proud all together now, communicate. Now, we will get to the guys' night scene in a moment, But one of the assignments that the guys are given to talk with their wives about this week are their future plans and goals. Now, on a cute little walk to their mailbox and back, Shawnee shares that she wants to have kids, but first she wants to travel and have time together as a couple. Jeff D wants to save up, be settled, and then have a whole gaggle of kids. He's super psyched to be a dad. Oh, how cute, but I am still skeptical. Now let's ease on into why I call BS on the season. Besides that, Jeff D zooming off doesn't even match the car that he's sitting in. So let's talk about Molly and John. They are treated to a visit from Pastor Cal. Dr. Pepper, if you are alive, send us a sign. I'm worried about you, boo. So John opens the door and immediately does a bro hug and a what's up. Yeah, the same what's up from the 1999 Super Bowl commercial. I was ready for him to ask Pastor Cal if he let the dogs out next. Well, Pastor Cal isn't just here to get warm hugs and a lesson to throwback culture references from John. He's there to check in, particularly with Molly, who, okay, turn on your little listening brains here. She is sporting a new darker hair color. It's more ashy blonde. Remember that. Now, is her vagina warming up to the idea of John? Nope, not yet. Now, I wrote down Molly's exact response, but I can't stop saying it in kind of a nod to the classic Office space. If I can get the physical to catch up with the rest of what we have, that'd be great. Now, this right here, Married at First Sight editors, we're going to have to check you here, because later on, at John's birthday, Molly and John are at dinner. Now, remember my favorite Twitter account for Married at First Sight, at Married at First Sight fan, but M-A-F-S fan? Well, she's super good at dates and calendars, so get this. Molly and John got married on August 27th. In this week's episode, they're celebrating John's birthday, which is September 15th. Married August 27th, birthday September 15th. Yeah, remember how they were supposed to have celebrated their 1 month anniversary, like what, a week or two ago, and now they're supposed to be on week 5 of marriage? Also, Molly had that new brownish hair color with Pastor Cal before this birthday dinner. And then at the birthday dinner, it's magically back to the old blonde. Now, it's more than obvious producers and editors have been serving up these episodes out of order, trying to stump all of us with these changes and feelings and attitudes. To be honest, because of this, I don't know if I can even watch another season if they continue doing this. Or they just need to be honest about it, and maybe it's a boring season, but at least it's accurate. Or if you're going to be shady, just be better at it. Now, the one question that remains for me is, what is John's favorite store? Remember, he's opening the card, and Molly gives him a gift card, and he's like, oh, my favorite store. Now, you didn't think I was just going to leave this burning question for you to find out the answer to. No. When there is a job to be done, I get it done. So I went back to that scene. I paused it about half a dozen times, watched it over and over and over again. And I couldn't make out any of the words on the gift card, even zooming in. But it was very colorful and it had kind of a beachy look to it. And I thought to myself, where would John shop? Now, I knew he wouldn't go with like a Macy's or a Brooks Brothers, but I knew he would be the type that would love going to a mall, because no other guy on the face of this fucking earth likes going to the mall, but I know John does. So I narrowed it down to Express for Men, or a beachy look at me kind of place like Tommy Bahama. One freaking Google search, and I am 99.9% sure that gift card is for Tommy Bahama. So if you're in the mood to get John something for his birthday or half birthday, would we just pass it, hit up a Tommy B and get your boy an obnoxious floral shirt. Now, before we talk about Jackie and Ryan, let's visit this guy's night. Inexplicably, Jeffy is wearing one of Sister Wife Maddie Brown's headbands, and this foursome of dorks have ordered the most pathetic appetizers I've ever seen. There was an empty Chinese takeout box, a plate of cold fries, which Ryan couldn't get enough of. He was shoving those things down his gullet at record speed. But dang it, I didn't see a sign for this restaurant, so I can't, you know, endorse it. I can't figure out what were the options. Maybe it was left over from someone's club sandwich or maybe a Reuben or roast beef. It's really frustrating me. Maybe you're in the Boston area. Give me a little heads up. Now, once again, it's up to Pastor Cal to carry this episode. Do you think Pastor Cal is the one locking Pepper and Jessica up somewhere so he can steal the show? I wouldn't put it past him. Do we even know if he's a real pastor? Now, at the suggestion that the guys sit down and make some sort of shorter, long-term goals with their wives, I actually think it's a really good idea, Ryan flips the hell out. He made John look calm and collected, which says a lot. Now, Ryan said that Jackie has talked about traveling and she has, you're already saying it out loud, I know it, a gypsy soul. And in his deluded brain, this means Jackie is now going to be a missing persons case and imagine their imaginary future children. He's even talking about the hypothetical mortgage payments that he's going to have to make. Now, if you don't watch this show, I'm not making this up. He actually said these things. He said that she may end up having his children. Then one day she's going to decide she wants to go on a trip and leave him as a single dad, footing a mortgage payment alone, all because she said she likes to travel. Pastor Cal tends to be harder on the women, but even he was flabbergasted. He took off his glasses, rubbed his eyes, and didn't even know how to get through Ryan's million mile per hour brain. But finally, he's like, you're 5 weeks in, you're talking 5 years in, man. Now, Jeffy's eyes were bugging out of his head looking at Ryan like, damn, I was trying to be your friend because freaking John over here is so annoying and he tries too hard, but crap, you're crazy too. Who am I going to be left with? Now, then we turn to this talk about being submissive to your wife. Pastor Cal meant like you don't always have to be the one calling the shots or being in control, letting your wife have her way just as she will let you have your way. It's needed sometimes. But no, Ryan has never been in a submissive relationship, and that's just not him. So Pastor Cal quickly asks him, well, how's that worked out for you? Now, Ryan's tail between the legs moment was TV gold because he says, well, I've never been in a successful relationship. Yeah, and we know why, because we've seen you now. So then there's also some, I don't even like saying it this way, but I'm just going to because it's a reference we all get. There's some locker room talk about being submissive in the bedroom. I don't know if I was the only one that found that to be a little much. And again, it was Ryan who brought it up. He's tending to do that lately. And in Jeff D's defense, he was the only one who spoke up and was like, what? Where did that come from? But overall, what I took from it was that Ryan is a selfish dick. And I also think he talks a lot when he's drinking. And I was getting the feeling that he was pretty buzzed during that dinner. And it proved to be correct because after this dinner, he went home to Jackie. Now, from what Jackie tells us, Ryan came home drunk from that dinner and he was pissed about something. Jackie was sick, looking forward to him just being home, chilling out together. But then he was acting all bitchy, stormed out with a friend. Thank goodness for Macaroni Monday, whatever the hell that is. That casserole just looked like dried up carbs to me. But they're going to carve their way through this mess of emotions they're in and see if there's something that they can fix. I think Jackie stayed pretty calm during this talk. She was like, listen, I don't know if I feel loved and cherished because I'm sick and you don't want to be here. But immediately, Ryan gets super defensive. I was out with the boys. I don't want you to tell me what to do. And then, oh, your gypsy soul. That's what I was thinking about. I need to go out. Me going out with the guys where I can unleash. And then, oh, I know what it was. He said something about, like, throw me a bone, throw me anything, just give me some slack. Really? Throw me a bone? Dude, she's giving you her time, her life. She's willing to sit down with you right now. That is more times than we've seen him give to her on camera. And he's been out quite a few times on camera. So if there's ones we haven't seen, he's going out a lot. It's not like she's asking him to be home every day by 5, right? Like, okay, you have your bedtime routine, you got to be here. So I think he just needs to chill the hell out. Now, finally, after Ryan gets all his verbal diarrhea out, he says he's sorry, and Jackie forgives him, and they cuddle. I don't think this is going to be the last time this is going to happen. Ryan wants, like, a little wifey to have on a shelf at home while he strokes his own ego while he's out with his friends. I think we all kind of know that type. He wants someone to fawn all over him, and he likes the idea that he does the same thing, but it's only when he wants to or when it makes him look good. I don't think he's necessarily good at the follow-up, if that makes any sense. Also not good, those goddamn American flag boxers. Burn them, Jackie. Now, lastly, Shaunice, or a producer, arranged a triple date for the couples. They're all set up to do this trapeze thing. Now, I have no idea why it happens to be in the middle of the night, but I didn't care. I'm a huge wuss when it comes to stuff like jumping or skydiving or bungeeing, but this trapeze thing, I think I can do, because ever since I first saw the trapeze, which was on Circus with the Stars way back in the days, we're talking, what, mid, late 80s, you youngsters won't know what this is, but there was a show where it was like soap stars, B and C listers, would learn circus acts like trapeze or lion taming and shit, and they would show them training and the performing. It was like, oh my God, it was amazing. So my dreams of 80s trapeze outfits and non-HD TV were quickly dashed when my very own husband, sitting next to me watching this, the man I vowed to be with in good times and bad, sickness and in health, he laughed at something John said. My head turned and stared at him so quickly. He like kind of jumped and had like a little reflex. He thought that maybe something broke or spilled. And then he just looks at me because I'm staring at him and he's like, well, what? Well, I just told him, like, we don't like him. We don't laugh at him. Now, we're on speaking terms again today, so it's all fine. No need to call Pastor Cal for him to come counsel us. But in all honesty, the trapeze date was kind of funny. I thought it was, it was funny seeing Jeffy scared shitless and John's attempt to shade Ryan by saying, that's how you throw your shoulder out, under his breath while Ryan was swinging. Oh, it was great. Now, then we get to the women talking versus the men talking, which was also interesting. Jackie doesn't see their marriage ending in divorce. Foreshadowing, perhaps. And then Ryan and Jeffy both have super weird reactions. And I still don't quite understand what Jeffy's triggers are, because he flip-flops so often. Or does he? Because this whole shady editing stuff. Now, we have 4 more weeks of this show, so let's continue to keep our eyes peeled and try to seek the truth between these sneaky edits. Now, this next show, Love at First Flight. I tried. I really, really tried, but I couldn't even force myself to stay focused after the first commercial break. I feel like they didn't tell us the premise of the show early enough in the episode. I still wasn't understanding, is this a married at first sight, they're getting married thing? Are they traveling? Is this just a really long blind date? And as soon as I heard the thing about the challenges, I was out. I'm personally not a fan of game shows, really, unless it's Amazing Race and some Survivor seasons. But I don't know, when the one couple had the goat shitting pellets all over the place, nope. my gag reflex cannot handle it. So, because I promised you a recap on the show and I am feeling to deliver, I'm going to replace it with my thoughts on a little Bravo show you might know called The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills at the end of the show. But first, Bridezillas. Different network, but same type of you can't sit with us kind of gals as the Housewives. Now, this week I watched the episode number 3 with Taylor the pageant bride and Michelle the virgin bride. First, I met Taylor, who's 23, and her fiance, Jonathan, who's 25. They're from Texas. And Taylor is a pageant chick. Like, you don't even need to know what she looks like. Think, oh, a pageant girl. That's it. So she's going to tell you all about the pageants she won a while back. Much like how I snark on men who peaked in high school and live in their glory days in their heads, Taylor is the same way. She's talking about how she won Miss Teen this and that, which would mean that it was, oh, anywhere between 4 and 10 years ago. Now, Taylor met Jonathan at a fast food restaurant. She just loves French fries, so she'd stalk him and seek him out to flirt. Oh, cute teenage love over a fryer. Wait, what? Oh, it was only 2 years ago? So Taylor was trolling Mickey D's for the fry guy when she was 21. Oh, thank God for those thousands of dollars her parents put out for pageant scholarships and opportunities, huh? Well, this soon-to-be Mrs. America, in her imagination, could also be Mrs. Mom United States because she also has a son with John. Now, Taylor is serious about her wedding planning, and she is a self-appointed social media guru and star, so her wedding has to have hashtags. It has to be photographed, and it must be shared. And it's also going to have, brace yourselves here, a Sunday brunch theme. All sweets, no salties. Well, we know the Duggars would not approve because there's no pickles and popcorn, but Taylor is going to have cupcakes, desserts, cheesecake, and lots of donuts. Okay, so there's one thing that she may be onto, because you know how I love donuts, but I'm just going to take a guess that this wedding theme isn't so much inspired by Taylor's love of sweets, but perhaps a steep discount on a Sunday morning wedding. We shall see in the next episode. Taylor is really tame in comparison to other bridezillas, to be honest. So, I don't know, this freaking out about having a fat dress and a skinny dress just seemed a little manufactured. But she does try one of those It Works wraps, but like I've heard from a lot of other people who've tried them, they don't work. Now, the real stars of the show are Taylor's mom's eyebrows and her friend Stacy, who looks a lot like teen mom Farrah's friend, Paula. Her lips are ridiculous. Botox, just, I mean, even the voiceover snarks on her boobs, which I actually thought was kind of tacky because you don't see them zooming in on men's guts or dicks and saying shit, right? I don't know, not a fan of that, we. Now, the last thing I saw was that Stacy, her friend, can't spend the night for Taylor's bachelorette party. So she gets all mad, calls her fiance to fix it for her. Typical spoiled brat behavior, which I totally blame her parents for if you raise a brat to be like that. But Taylor's insisting John cancel his bachelor party because she doesn't want to be alone for the night. But more than that, she's filtered her life on social media to look like she's perfect. And now it's going to look like she has no friends in real life because guess what? She has no real friends in real life. That's what acting like a spoiled 12-year-old will get you once you're 23 and the rest of the world has grown up, sweetheart. Now, we also have 22-year-old Michelle and 22-year-old Peyton. They're from Detroit. Michelle is our virgin bride who got frisky with a stripper last week. And her mom, Mama D, reminds me of a less salty Mama Joyce from Real Housewives of Atlanta. The main issue with Michelle, besides her hair trigger temper, is that Peyton's family and Michelle do not get along. It's really a shame because from what I saw during this episode, they're not even arguing about any real serious issue. It's all just made up stuff because they enjoy not liking each other. Now, Mama D isn't innocent in all of this. Remember, she is kind of like a Mama Joyce. She seems to have a very fun time riling Michelle up, getting her ready to pounce on Peyton's older sister, Marilyn. Maybe I missed something last week, but Marilyn seemed pretty harmless to me, so I don't really see why she's getting all this hate. Now, fast forward, and Michelle herself is late for her wedding rehearsal, and Marilyn and Michelle start going at it. And then Deontay, who is Peyton's brother, the groom's brother, starts going in on Michelle because Michelle didn't want Peyton to have his brother as his best man. Now that I have to call BS on, because to me, if your fiance or your husband wants someone as his best man, especially if it's his brother, let him do what he wants. All he's going to end up doing is standing next to him. I mean, a best man, they don't really even have a role, right? Hand over the ring? Or does the ring bearer do that? But I mean, it's not like you're going to have to marry the best man, sleep with him too, unless he's really hot and maybe you're open to that kind of thing. I don't know. Now, I thought it was pretty damn hilarious when Peyton was physically hiding behind Michelle as she's fighting with his family. It's the same move I would do if I were to go on a police ride along. Like, I want to be there for the action, in on it, but not enough to actually have to be in danger or put my money where my mouth is. Now, eventually they stop fighting. You think the whole thing has died down with Deontay, but no, the next thing you know, Deontay and Peyton are punching each other, body slamming one another in the parking lot. I don't know why no one was trying to stop it because it looked way more than playful to me. It was a real legit fight. And I mean, if we're gonna get serious here for a second, it really is kind of sad because you know, as time goes on, families grow, kids are born, cousins get involved, and it's just going to get uglier. Now, fast forward to the wedding day, and Mama D is psyched that it's our wedding day. Like I said, I think Mama D is pretty harmless. I think she's in on the joke, but I gotta say, I was not a fan of her wearing white to her own daughter's wedding. However, I mean, we kind of got to know Michelle. I don't think she would have allowed her mom to wear white if she didn't want her to wear white. Now, during the ceremony, these two really pulled it together because I think Michelle looked gorgeous. Her makeup was perfect for her, and I loved Peyton wearing those glasses. I think they were fake, but he looked really cute. He looked sharp. I enjoyed the whole look, the whole ensemble for both of them together. Now the reception. While Mama D is enjoying it, she's especially excited for her daughter to be deflowered tonight. Tonight, my baby is going to become a woman. Oh, so cringeworthy. As a mother myself, my brain won't even let itself even try to compute or comprehend me possibly saying something like that or thinking like that. It just I can't go there. Now, remember that fist fight last night between Deontay and Peyton? Well, the dumbass groomsmen decided that Deontay didn't get enough punches in, and they're psyching him up to go and confront the bride, Michelle. This is all kinds of wrong. Not on the wedding day, not in the middle of the reception. That was just wrong, and honestly, it only made Deontay look worse. He looked like the crazy, irrational one. So he comes in hot for Michelle, and she proceeds to joyfully kick him out, yelling, "Bye, bye." It was the mirror image of teen mom, young and pregnant Ashley kicking her baby daddy's mom, Shen, out of her baby shower, which we will be discussing in just a bit. Now, somehow Deontay makes his way back into the reception. Oh, I enjoyed this so much for my own sake. This guy is wasted beyond belief. He is Weekend at Bernie's-ing it all over on the table, on the floor. Later, we learn he threw up somewhere, so Michelle and Peyton are going to have to pay a $500 fee, Perhaps that's some karma for Michelle's temper. I don't know. So how was the virgin's wedding night? Well, Peyton was ready to rock her world and mess up her hair, but oops, Michelle fell asleep. It's going to be a long 50 plus years of marriage for Peyton, God willing, but it's not over yet because Aunt Brenda, who's a wedding planner who helped plan the wedding, is on her way over the morning after the wedding to collect a check. But no, it's not going to happen because Michelle and Peyton have no desire and no plans to pay her. Now, I think that's super shitty if it's a real thing, if they really were going to pay her and they're just backing out now. But I'm kind of curious, was that just manufactured for the show to drum up some drama? Now, if it is a real thing, like they are just screwing her over, this is a classic case for my queen, Judge Judy. And unfortunately, I think for Brenda, I think Judge Judy would say that unless she had a written contract, Brenda's just going to have to eat the cost. Now, this is a perfect transition to my big, fat, fabulous life. Now, Whitney is back from her 8K in Hawaii. I really enjoyed that episode, you know, the one where she acted like she was injured at Pearl Harbor. Well, she's made a miraculous recovery from that pain in her feet, and she's come back to this really cute little house. This is only my second episode, so I was surprised to see that Whitney has a house of her own. I guess I just assumed that she'd be living with her parents, but she has more of a Ruby situation going on. Do you remember that show with Ruby? I loved her. Remember, she had the cute roommates, the cute friends. I would 100% be for a Ruby revival. That would make me hacky. Oh, only a true Ruby lover will appreciate that. Well, Whitney is an animal lover, and a cat has made its way into her garage dance studio. Correct me if I'm wrong, my big fat fab followers, but she wants to keep this cat, but her dad is afraid a fourth cat will prevent any man from wanting to penetrate Whitney, so he votes no. Now, there's a scene with some chick named Heather who broke up with Whitney's former or almost former roommate, Buddy. Okay, I'm just going to totally ignore that. It was a snore for me. But here's where I got to know her mom, Babs, a little better. Now, Babs sadly had a stroke 6 months ago, so she's getting a checkup to see if she'll be cleared to drive. Now, hear me out. Stroke or not, I think all parents over the age of 55 need an annual exam with their kids in attendance to have to sign off on their parents' grasp of the rules of the road besides the medical stuff. My parents scare the freaking shit out of me, and they have for years. My dad drives with 2 feet. My mom thinks the center lane is where you're supposed to line your car up, right down the middle. I mean, I've told you how they accidentally stole a car. So everyone needs to, maybe we need to make this a state law. Maybe we need to put this in a referendum in the election in November. Let's get this on the ballot. Any of you politicians, let's get it on there. All right, let's get back and focus. Focus, Jody. All right. And the most adorable part of Babs was seeing her in the office with her doctor, who I think could be the same doctor on Teen Mom 2, little Allie's doctor, Dr. Sow. Well, she's telling him that her fingers are sometimes still numb. And she says, the problem is my corner finger and my thumbkin are still numb. She called it her thumbkin. Oh, like automatically, Babs, I love her. Now let's get to the highlight of the latest two episodes that I've seen. No one else on TLC matters anymore. I feel like I'm watching my inner self when this man shows up. And that man's name is Todd. All hail Todd. His facial expressions are the windows to his soul, and I love him for that. I'm going to be posting kind of a tribute collage to Todd, so be on the lookout for that. I may blow it up. I may put it on my bedroom wall because he is the best thing to ever happen to this show and to this network. Now, there's a lot of talk about Buddy moving because of his current relationships in his city. He's going to move to Charleston to start over. I really wish I could snark more on him, but I just don't know the years of backstory. And all I can say is, thankfully, he's not pulling a Teen Mom type of deal and doing the same crap he's always done after rehab like we know our girls do. Now, I also learned of some family pet pig, Mr. Pigglesworth, that died. I don't know why he wasn't with the family anymore or why or where he lived before, during, or after, but this begs the question, what happened to George Clooney's pet pig? Do you remember that? He went from a massive potbelly pig to marrying a woman who weighs half my birth weight. I thought you had a heart, George. I guess we were all fooled. Now, other than that, not much really happens on this show. I don't really understand the appeal besides Todd, but I am going to say that I've had a little change of heart with how I see Whitney. She was a lot less whiny this week. I liked that she wasn't self-conscious at all. She wasn't apologizing for being herself, and I really honestly liked that about her. I think she's a good friend, a good daughter, maybe a little immature, and there might be some weird family boundaries, but I mean, this is a family show where they all have to film together, so we have to kind of keep that in account. I may pop in and out of this show when there's something going on, so keep me in the loop when it gets really spicy or really funny, or if there's a really good Todd scene. I must be on alert for everything Todd. Okay, thanks. So let's jump ahead, and in just a moment, let's put on our sweats, slip on our sandals, and check in at the Fulton County Jail for 60 Days In. All right, 60 Days In. My thoughts on this final episode before the reunion? I love this freaking show. It needs to be on back-to-back season after season. Now, Nate, this poor guy, the best guy in the whole pod, the whole group, the whole ensemble, he's the last one in there. Even though he's been in there the longest, now he's got to be stuck in there the longest. And Nate is no idiot. He knew something was up. And doesn't that always happen that the best one has to sacrifice the most? He's the one who's most in danger, but oh, since he can handle it, keep him in there. But man, when they called his name for release and all the guys gathered around him, they're giving him goodbyes. Oh, like I love Nate too. I would have been doing the same thing. And I started tearing up when Desmond, his roommate, said that he felt like he was going to cry. I really hope that they do stay in touch. And I don't think Desmond really would be mad at him for lying, or I hope he wouldn't. I got to think that Desmond knows that Nate is sincere. You can just read it on him, right? You can tell when someone is or isn't. Now, even the boss man, Colonel, whatever the hell his name is, was fangirling out over Nate during that exit interview. Now, because I like Nate and he's my little G.I. Joe Marine, he's a hero. I can't speak badly about him, but I will just say if I had to critique something, I wouldn't put him and his fiance together as a couple. To me, they just don't physically fit, and that is all. But I'm very happy that he's happy. All right, now let's talk about Emmanuel, aka Bucci. Ugh, this freaking guy. His cockiness is so frustrating. And what an idiot. He's antagonizing the other inmate when he's about to get released. I mean, the look on his face when that door wasn't open after he was talking all that shit, he was scared shitless. And I was loving every second of it. He was talking a big game as that door was closing, the safety behind the big doors, but I loved every second of that guy flying on the stairs at him because, oh yeah, that's what we all wanted to do. Now, unfortunately, I think this experience will only make Emmanuel cockier and more arrogant. He'll think that he's even smarter and better than now that he's so experienced in the criminal justice system. A lot less crazy, but still cocky, like Robert from season 1. Now let's talk Anjali. She was such an unapologetic brat during that exit interview. Now, I saw that she had been trying to be a TV host and an actress for some time before this, and now I can totally see that schmoozy, slimy quality to her. Now, I'm going to reserve some judgment here until after I see the reunion that will have aired last night when you're listening to this, because maybe, I doubt it, but maybe she will apologize. Stephanie, the colored contacts, no, I hate a color contact on anyone. I still think Stephanie is a jerk. I don't think she is a friendly person, but I have to admit that she looked gorgeous, all done up during that exit interview. She gets points for a great comeback. Johnny, nothing too much to say about him except that I liked him. I got a lump in my throat when he would talk about his son. I love that he requested chocolate after he got out and then stopped to get his wife flowers before going home. Johnny be good indeed. Now, quick commercial break for the foster care system. And I gotta tell you, that commercial works because every time it comes on, all I have to do is look at Dave and he doesn't even have to see me. He just senses my head looking at him and I hear him say, no, we're not adopting or fostering. But I mean, the kids need me. I can do homework on the phone from another room. It's very effective marketing. Good job, snaps, bravo to you, foster care people. Now, back to Alan. He is so stunned when they call his name that I felt like they had just called me. I was like, whoa. And oh my God, he was pretty damn cute with his daughter when he got home. I enjoyed that he enjoyed a nice beer. He's got a cute little family, cute little wife. I like him. There's really not anything to dislike. I really enjoyed his reaction to hearing how Anjali fell in love, however, because at first he laughed, but then you could see it sunk in. He was processing it, and then he was like, hell no. He is going to come undone at this reunion, and oh my God, I am really interested to see how Anjali handles herself. Or perhaps she doesn't. Now, what are we thinking about Andrew? I feel badly for the guy, to be honest. I think he has been living his whole life to be this person that his dad has wanted him to be. And clearly he is not that person, thank God, because Matt himself is a crazy person. But when Andrew pulled out his rose gold phone and put that beanie on his head, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I just think he is in deep denial, and I will leave it at that. My heart actually hurts for him because I feel like he's been trying to build up courage to do or be someone he truly deep down is not, and he just needs to embrace that. I don't know. I'll just leave it at that. Read into it what you may. But when he said, I think I'm ready to start dating. I just spent 2 months in jail. I feel like I can handle taking a girl out on a date. I mean, he's likening asking a girl out on a date to jail for 2 months. That's pretty telling. Whether he wants to date a girl, a guy, no one, he wants to date a Bible, I don't care. I just want him to be happy and to do what he wants to do and knows that it's okay. Don't just do something because you think it's what you should do or should be. In other words, don't listen to your crazy-ass father. Now, the reunion, like I said, will have aired last night. Maybe there's a second part next week, which I will or will not be blinking during because I cannot miss a millisecond of this show. Now, take note of the subtlety and how I'm grouping this segment of the podcast. First 60 days in, and now Teen Mom OG and Young and Pregnant. Now, what is a week like without Farrah on Teen Mom OG? I don't know how you feel, but it feels great to me. I've never been a Farrah fan, and it feels like she's finally been put into a well-needed and well-deserved timeout. Hopefully, fingers crossed, it's for good. Starting out with Caitlin and Tyler. Tyler's back at home working on the clothing line stuff, and he's also juggling Nova. It really was heartbreaking to see Nova asking for mommy when you have kids that are so innocent, they have no idea what's going on. They're just so sweet. They miss their parents. It just guts me. I am a sucker. Now, give it up for Tyler because I do think he's a good dad. I think it's going to be a really profound and meaningful thing for Nova when she gets older to look back on these shows. I mean, you see her dad running her a bath. He's doing her hair in pigtails. Worrying about, oh, is she sick? Am I doing this right? That little turkey is going to be lucky to have a dad who's moving heaven and earth to make a good life for her. I think it's great. Now, don't be too shocked by this appearance of my heart showing through right now. I will be back to ripping someone a new asshole in just a few minutes, rest assured. Now, the next day, producer Kiki shows up. Looks like she's had a rough past. No, something about her jawline, her mouth tells me she probably relates to April and Butch in a lot of ways. I'll just leave it at that. Now, she sees how maxed out Tyler is, and I agree, he's got too much on his plate with his family issues. But I was thrilled to see that he's putting a clean cloth down under the clothes he's folding to send out now. Claps for you. Thank you, baby Jesus. Now, fast forward to Tyler, Nova, April, and Caitlin's dad, and some aunt, someone or other. They're flying to see Caitlin at her treatment facility. I really enjoyed seeing April and Kate's dad coexisting and being there for Caitlin. Her dad seems kind of quiet, not sure what all has happened there, but it really is amazing to see that they can come all together after this. Now, Nova sees Caitlin. It was really sweet. Caitlin looked really good. We didn't see too much of her after that, but we did get to see how Kate's aunt is basically the hired but unpaid help. She's cooking up dinners, taking care of Nova, being the family counselor at the dinner table. Go Auntie No Name. Now we also get to see Nova not only eat, but request a raw onion. Someone please tell me how this happens. I cannot bribe my kids with all the money, iPads, Target gift cards in the world to try to even take a bite of 99% of desserts or hamburgers or mac and cheese. And this kid is walking around demanding a Vidalia. Maybe Caitlin is onto something with her finger snacking as a fetus's first meals. There's something about finger skin that makes your kid have a more diverse palate. I don't know. Now, long story short, since we don't see too much and we can't find out too many details of Kate's status, April has to do some what's called list work, which means she's got to work on some things herself in order to help Kate work through previous traumas. And everyone is realizing how traumatic pregnancies are for Kate, which is why losing this latest pregnancy was such a powerful trigger for her. Macy's turn. Well, she's back from Nicaragua where she was filming Naked and Afraid. Taylor and Macy's clothing line is just flying off the shelves, so they have to expand to a new warehouse for shipping in Jacksonville. Taylor wants to take Bentley to see this empire, which he will inherit someday. So they take a day trip down there, and wow, there are three whole shelves that contained 20 SKUs of t-shirts with pockets. It was pretty impressive. I bet it took that warehouse manager at least 45 minutes to assemble those IKEA shelves and stock them. Now, Bentley is a good kid because he's not even bragging how he got to pick out the faux croc skin pocket for the new t-shirt design. And P.S., Macy plays with her kids and Jade gets a bed.
Blue bed!
P.P.S., Jay needs to get a hold of a pair of scissors and cut her little brother's hair off on accident.
Blue bed.
Now, because MTV hates me, Ryan and Mackenzie are back. Mackenzie's going to pretend to apply to nursing school in the next few years while she plays the game with MTV to see whether they want her to be a full-time player. And Ryan and Mackenzie think a fix-it baby would be fun. And they also ponder aloud if Macy is over the past yet, while proving the point that they and they alone are the only ones talking about the past. Mackenzie also eats refried beans with her friend, and a dog licks Ryan's plates cleaned. No, I didn't say Mackenzie. That would be mean, but I was thinking it, and so are you, so we're even. And now we have Amber. Amber feels like being a mom this week because she has lots of people around to entertain and distract Boo Boo. You see, Leah, Big Head Drew, and Boo Boo are going to visit Bubby. Bubby is Amber's brother, if you recall. I cannot go any further without taking issue to this. Again, last week, we had her calling Andrew Babe, as if it's his first name, and of course, Boo Boo Boogerbutt, and now Bubby. I mean, is this a B thing? Like, she likes words with B? If anyone knows how to do one of those football square things, we're going to need to start some sort of a prediction game with what nickname she's going to destroy her soon-to-be son's life with. Is it going to be, it's going to be bad. You know it is. But what other B name is there? What is possible for Amber to come up with? Real quick, we only get one scene of Gary. He's wearing men's Skechers socks. Moment of silence for the shape-ups he probably popped that came with those freebies to warm up his fat tootsies. And now I can't tell if Gary is getting bigger or if he's getting smaller. Because when he changes the style of chair that he rests his noggin back into, it throws the normal ratio off, so I can't quite tell what proportion of reality we're working with. I mean, poor Christina feels like she's walking through a freaking funhouse depending on where Gary's propping himself up that day. All right, now back to Bubby's house. Andrew is growing hair at an increasingly rapid rate. He's like Michael J. Fox in Teen Wolf. At any moment, hair is just going to grow out from under his sleeves. I don't think I'm that far off because if you notice, Andrew keeps adding layers of clothing. I mean, they're in Florida and he's wearing a sweater at one point. Something is up. Well, there was a lot of chaos in these scenes with Amber because apparently the Portwoods love Nerf guns. Now, my 8-year-old loves them too, but if he thought of pointing that thing towards me or even using it in the house, I'd sweep the leg out from underneath him and he would be a prisoner of war in 2 seconds. It's called respect and you're going to earn it in this house. But no, Bubby was thinking the same thing of Amber. I was thinking when he said, "You're lucky I don't have mine, you're lucky I don't have mine," I assumed, I thought he was saying like he packs a real weapon, like, "Oh, you're lucky that you didn't get shot for real." But no, he meant an actual Nerf gun. God damn it. Now, once inside this Nerf-loving home, Leah shoots a Nerf directly into Andrew's temple. Dear Leah, thank you. Love all of us. Now, Bubby wastes no time in grilling Andrew to find out 3 things. Number 1, does he have kids? Number 2, does he have a job? And number 3, did he watch Teen Mom before? All the things Matt lied about. Now, Andrew and Amber say he's a cinematographer. Does holding a camera make one a cinematographer? But Andrew also says he wants to be a writer now. Guys, he thinks everyone should be a writer. That sounds so shady to me. So now he's just an unemployed camera holder who likes to write things. And he's living in Indiana because he likes seasons. Yeah, that doesn't sound shady at all. I don't know why Bubby is buying into this shit. I think maybe it's because Andrew isn't really saying much back. Like, he doesn't have a whole lot to go on. He just sits there with his big hairy head and his gross smiles. I mean, can't you at least go and get a haircut? You got nothing else going on all day. Just groom yourself. Ugh. Amber really does have the worst taste in men. Now, in the last 2 scenes with Amber, we learn that she isn't planning on a prenup. At least I think that's what I heard her say. I hope it wasn't, but I'm pretty sure. And she's then laying in bed with her brother talking about her plans with Andrew. I was totally weirded out by this. We all know Amber likes staying in bed all day and filming from there, but laying in bed with your brother, I'm not saying that they are like up to some incestual crap, but it is an odd choice, right? Okay, now since we're on the Teen Mom train, let's just keep heading toward the station with some young and pregnant. Thanks to those of you who tweeted me, sent me some messages about your opinions on Young and Pregnant. I'm still not a big fan, and from what I'm hearing, it's about 50-50 whether you like it or not. Ashley and Barr were our couple from last week that was having issues with Barr's mom, Shenny, from the block, and after last week's big blowout fight, Ashley and Barr have decided that they need to, Pastor Cal will be proud, communicate better and try to be respectful to their families. Ashley's decided that despite Shen showing her dirty underwear on Facebook Live, calling her a bitch and basically just hating her, she's going to invite her to the shower anyway. Now, Ashley isn't all innocent in this. I think this wasn't entirely a genuine invite. She was just inviting her because she knew it would open the door to her saying, "See, I told you your mom was crazy. I did the right thing." She may have very well gotten her way, right? Well, it's baby shower day, and Ashley is dressed up in a virginal white dress with a unicorn headband. She looked really pretty, minus the headband. As soon as Shen walks up, you already knew she was ready to throw down. She had on this skin-tight dress, tight bun, big ol' hoops. And those are some fighting hoops if I ever saw them. And then you hear Shen look at Barr and call out, "That's my seed." That's grossly blurred boundaries. My seed. Ugh. Now, this shower is pretty strange in that it's in a bigger hall space, entertaining space. There's lots of food and decorations, yet it looked like there were maybe 10 or 15 people there. This lack of guests makes Shen's over-the-top obnoxious behavior stand out even more because they were playing this game and then Shen was trying to be funny, but she just ended up calling way too much attention to herself, and it was very cringy to watch. What set off a series of unfortunate events was this game caller. She kind of forgot Barr's name for a second, just in the pressure of being the game caller, and she called Barr Ashley's significant other. And that just got Barr's mom all riled up. She was looking for something to lose her shit over, and this was going to be it. So she starts losing her cool, and then Barr comes over, settles her down. And then we get to this photo booth thing. It didn't even upset me to see everyone yelling over who called who a bitch. What got me was right before that, when Shen walked up to her son, Barr, and said, "Look at your fine ass." That is not normal. That is not okay. Now, I don't think Ashley is innocent in all this, but if I were her, Ashley, I'm speaking to you. I'm telling you right now, run, get out of this, keep a friendly relationship with Barb, but do not marry into that family, girl. Do not do it. Now, next up, we have Kayla and Stefan. These two jingle nuts are going shopping for baby stuff. Stefan wants to get a basketball hoop and Kayla wants to get a bowling set. I'm pretty sure they think this baby is just going to like walk out of her vagina when it's born. Thank God for Kayla's mom who points out like, you might want to focus more on, you know, newborn items. But don't worry, you guys. Kayla and Stefan have picked up some clothes, a few onesies, and one burp cloth. Oh, good. Okay, sounds like you're all set then. Later, Stefan blows off Kayla when he's supposed to come over. He's going to help with baby stuff. However, Kayla has a friend over who happens to suffer from the same stuck-to-couch-itis as Amber Portwood. Stefan is probably up to no good. Something shady's going on. Now, Kayla thinks Stefan wants to stay together, but Stefan makes it clear to his friends that he just wants to have fun and work, nothing else. Yeah, nothing you might want to tell the person that you've been playing house with, you selfish little nerd. Well, it comes to no surprise to anyone, including Kayla, that Stefan has been cheating on her. She confronts him at some party. We don't see it, except in little cartoon form. It turns ugly, and he, of course, turns it on her. Classic Teen Mom storyline. I think this is kind of the Brianna and Devon of the season. Now, moving on to Brianna and Danae. Danae's mom and sister are visiting. Danae's mom doesn't look a day over 22. It was wild to see how young she looked. And his mom is not too crazy about Danae moving to Wisconsin to take care of Brianna and this baby that isn't even his. And she's asking him, like, are you sure you just don't want to move back to Chicago? Well, it does get Danae thinking. It really does get into his brain. And he seems to kind of want to leave. So what's a guy to do? Well, he decides that he's going to go out with other friends and leave Brianna at home. And this starts a huge fight. Once again, unfortunately, we don't get to see any of this except in cartoon form. What we learn is that Brianna chased after the car that Danae was in. She got in the car. She didn't have any shoes on, by the way. Changed her mind, then jumps out of the car and starts walking back home several blocks at 11 p.m. Now, did Danae stop and see that she got home safely while she was barefoot walking home alone in the cold? Nope. He drove away. Now, of course, Brianna's mom hears of this. She's pissed off. I would be too if someone was trying to convince me that they could care for my daughter, even wanted to move into my house, and then you're just going to let her walk home alone and not even drive along or next to her to make sure she's back. But Brianna was the one who chased after a moving car late at night, ran out without thinking, no shoes, and she didn't make the rational choice to just stay home in the first place. So they're both immature for not thinking about this baby. Of course, Brianna's mom confronts Danae about not driving her home, and Danae gets defensive and leaves. She also flees the scene later when Brianna confronts her, so I have a feeling it's gonna be this cat and mouse thing for quite some time. I think Danae's mom and Brianna's mom want the same thing, actually, and they really should get together, combine forces, try to get these two to stop trying so hard and stop playing house, just face reality. So I am team Brianna mom, Danae mom. Now, on the opposite spectrum of parents, we have our girl Jade and her boyfriend Sean. Jade is moving, so they're going to have more space for their baby in a few weeks. And by the way, the baby's name is Chloe. It's spelled like a Kardashian because of course it is. But Jade calls her mom to come and hang out. Her mom could not have sounded more annoyed and less interested in her daughter. And Jade's like, hey, listen, mom, I'm the daughter. I'm trying to have a better relationship with you, but we both have to try equally. To which her mom says, okay, Jade. And she eventually hangs up on her because she's so offended by her daughter's concern over her health and sobriety and wanting to build a relationship. Now, this is where I think Tyler from OG needs to come and talk to Jade because it sounds like a lot of old school butch behavior, and actually really April too. So maybe just Kate and Tyler go and talk to Jade. Well, later on, we meet Grandma Lori, who looks like she could be Jade's mom. She looks awfully young. Just these three generations of women look like they have had a tough go at life already. But Grandma Lori sympathizes with Jade because Jade really is the parent here. But guess what? We find out that Grandma gave Jade's mom a drug test to see if she is indeed actually using drugs again. But it was clean. Well, damn it. This is kind of good and bad because although Jade is relieved that she's clean, it also really confuses her because her mom has been so cruel to her before when she was using, and she's so cruel to her now that I think she kind of wants to blame the bad treatment on the drugs, but now it's like, no, my mom is just a real asshole. So I feel badly for her. I am going to bet that Jade ends up being a good mom because she's already done a lot of parenting of her parents. So I think she's going to be a good mom, but she's going to have a tough go at it for quite some time. Now, lastly, we have Lexi and Kyler. Guess what Lexi wants to name the baby, guys? Zane. You know, after that dork from One Direction. I think he was the one who just broke up with Gigi Hadid, if I have my One Directioners right. But you know you're too young to have a baby when you're naming your baby after a boy bander. Kale did the same thing with Isaac, right? Because she loved Isaac Hansen from the Hansen Brothers. I mean, what a legacy of a name to live up to. Isaac Hansen. By the way, whose favorite Hansen was Isaac? Like, I question Kale's judgment just from that. Now, the entire hour is devoted to helping Lexi figure out if she's dating Kyler or not. For real, she doesn't even know if they are a couple. So her mom very gently, I think too gently, suggests that Lexi talk, or rather ask Kyler, are we dating? I don't get it. Is Lexi really in this deep of denial that she doesn't know if she's dating someone or not? Or does she not know how people and life work? Finally, Lexi asks Kyler, are we dating? And he's very clear that no, they are not dating. He doesn't want to be locked down. He's told her that before. And he also says, you're really clingy, like a fly in a spider web. You don't get that, do you? To which she smiles, giggles, and says, it's so confusing. Now, my first reaction is to not be angry or annoyed with her because she has this lost little lamb look on her face. But I think that's the thing. She's cute. Let's just say she looked like a Janelle or an Amber. We'd be screaming at her. But since she is looking cute and innocent, we're like, oh, it's just her. I don't know. Lexi, this is one, like, I just can't predict where it's going to go. Now, after a quick break, Sister Wives and Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. It's finally time for Sister Wives. TLC, what did you do? No warning, no notice, no little preview with a disclaimer, not to be holding anything that could break or shatter, be dropped, resulting in damage. Cody Dieter Brown is wearing a ponytail. Now, firstly, I don't know if his middle name is actually Dieter because I couldn't find any information on my deep dive, but it seems a likely Mormon fit, and I enjoy trying out names for him. And secondly, this ponytail was not Cody's normal mid-range ponytail. This was a high and tight ponytail like Ramona Singer wore at her apartment rejuvenation party. At Christine's house, they're having a barbecue, and for the first time ever in all my years of watching Sister Wives, something they were cooking actually looked tasty. Those shish kebabs on the grill with the peppers and the onions, it spoke to me in a language that I know and that I love, meat and veggies. Now, speaking of love, Aspen's boyfriend Mitch is there. If you didn't already know, Mitch is the brother of Vanessa Aldridge from Seeking Sister Wife, aka the Pioneer Woman. You would think Mitch was straight out of an Amish town because his beard, he's got the short bangs. Those two things together just scream Rumspringa, but his heart sings Mormon. Now, Robin is there. She's got to be the cool mom, so she's giving Aspen and Mitch a hard time about dating. All of a sudden, you see Cody lurking in the kitchen window. My real life nightmare come true. This once happened. This is a true story. In high school, I was with some friends at a friend's house. We're in her family room, and I look out the window. Outside in the backyard was a kid from our high school just standing in the backyard in the floodlight, just smiling and waving. So as everyone's talking, no one's noticing this except me. I just barked, "Oh my God, it's Jim Allen." Okay, that's not his name, but it's kind of close. But still to this day, the thought of someone just smiling in a window for any reason just gives me the chills. Now, side note, the high school creeper is now an ophthalmologist, and Cody is so damn lucky Dayton didn't just shut those blinds in his face like I would have. Now, we weren't just treated to Mitch. We also got to see Tony. He was the one yelling, "Okay, Mitch, Christine is way nicer to you than she was to me." Yeah, because he isn't eating the fucking shish kebabs like a moron. Did you see how Tony was eating that footlong skewer? He had it in his hand and was deep-throating the end of it, kind of like Mary and her banana, as he slid a chunk of meat off. Like, you don't eat a shish kebab like you're eating a grocery store sample. You slide the thing off the skewer, slice it up with a fork and a thing called a fucking knife, and you eat it. I'm starting to think Tony makes every food a street food just so he doesn't have to learn how to use utensils. Now, on a positive note, Isabel's spine is down to a 35-degree curve from a 45-degree. But then, you know who, let's just call her Drooly, asks, "But will her spine ever be straight?" Well, thanks for dashing all her hopes and dreams. Let me guess, you want to do a show for the family now? Now, let's see what Mary is up to before we dive into the therapy session. Mary's friend Cheryl is coming to visit. Cheryl is the friend we met a few seasons back that was also seeking a relationship online with the same person Mary was. I refuse to say Mary was catfished because that implies that she was a victim. Mary sought out that relationship. She didn't just fall into the internet. Well, turns out Cheryl has a daughter. She's bringing her with her. So Mary wants Mariah to have a little play date with Cheryl Jr. She thinks they can exchange stories and, you know, maybe Cheryl Jr. can try and convince Mariah that Mary's a victim because Mary can't seem to do that herself with her own daughter. Now, if you think I'm being too hard on Mary, Mary says there was a lot of emotional abuse. That's what it was. No one understands unless you went through it. My family doesn't get it. Well, Mayor, maybe if you took some accountability in you actively looking for someone to have a relationship with outside your marriage and your family, you wouldn't have opened yourself up to that. And maybe if you were truthful with your family that you were having feelings for this person instead of insisting that it was like this, oh, day-to-day pen pal bullshit, you wouldn't have been so emotionally abused or tortured. Now, my personal feelings about Mary aside, she's confusing as hell. She says she's over this catfishing scandal, but she's not sure her family is. Are they teasing me and being playful because they're trying to cope with it or because they're past it? Well, the fact that Mary still brings it up all the time and refers to her being emotionally abused from this leads me to believe she is the one not past it. Classic projection, and she does it later too. Now, in the meantime, before Cheryl comes to Vegas, Mary's going to bring Mariah and Audrey to Seattle and try to bribe her into meeting Cheryl and Cheryl Jr. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, it's a graduation gift. Now, I know Mariah is in love and everything, but does Audrey really have to go everywhere with her now? I would say the same thing about Tony. Like, can you just lay off the sitting on laps, arms around each other for 30 seconds? And also, is it a requirement to wear ripped jeans up to your crotch at the college they attend? I enjoy a distressed jean, but Mariah and Audrey, you gotta settle the hell down with it. Put the scissors down. Now, Mary is very much the third wheel on this trip that she herself is funding, and I was cringing for her. I was also cringing because that LuLaRoe geometric duster, and there were actually two of them, they were quite possibly the ugliest things I have seen on TV since Jean Bice's Quaker Factory collection on QVC. Mary finally asked Mariah over dinner if she'd be up to meeting Cheryl Jr. Now, Mariah had a look of like, Okay, I get it now. That's why she gifted me this trip. Classic mom. But she says instead that she just needs to work on trusting Mary more. So Mary decides that she's just going to barter to get her way. Now, I'll go to the gay bar with you if you go meet Cheryl and Cheryl Jr. Now, then they go to this gay bar, which I've heard actually isn't a gay bar. I don't know. Maybe it's just in a gay-friendly neighborhood. I'm not sure, but Mary feels weird about it. I kind of think that Mariah just wanted Mary to go out with her just to make Mary squirm, or at least I'd like to think that Mariah would be that clever. Okay, we got to get to this therapy session. This is so good. I've been waiting all season for this. Now, little did we know, but for the past few weeks, the four wives had been seeing Nancy, the therapist, because there's been this whole kashaw over Axel's birth. Turns out Mary's been pissed off and hurt because everyone was there in the birth room when Maddie pushed Axelrod out. Now, this instantly sent me over the edge, and I'm not even Mama Bear Janelle. This is so Mary to turn something that has nothing to do with her, a moment that is precious for someone else. She has to turn all eyes on her and make herself out to be a victim. You could cut the tension in that waiting room for Nancy with one of Mary's razor-sharp split ends. No one's talking. No one's making eye contact. The reason they're all there again is because Mary is still feeling like no one's being open and honest with her. So Nancy opens the session by asking what it is they all want to accomplish during this particular session because they keep talking about it and there's only so many free sessions she's willing to be comped by being filmed, right? So I disagree during this session with what Christine said, that she feels Janelle just launched into Mary too aggressively. I think Janelle simply explained that there is a pattern in Mary's behavior. They reach out to her several times. She doesn't respond or she pulls herself away from the group when there is the slightest barrier. Mary's just such a brat. Thank you for sharing, Janelle. I feel like I do, but you can totally tell Mary is trying to suck up to Nancy using therapy words, therapy talk, but she does pull away. I don't know how Mary is denying this. So let's get to like the actual thing they're fighting over. And it's all a timeline. It's all a miscommunication. So when Maddie was in labor, she wasn't progressing. Mary was the one, they got it on film, who said that she was going to leave because she had to go do one of her stupid Facebook LuLaRoe sales. Once again, Mary, you chose to leave. Now, if you think her LuLaRoe fans would have been mad that Mary didn't do a sale because Maddie was in labor and she had to leave, no, I don't believe it. These people who buy her shit love Sister Wives. That's why they're buying from her. They would love having a feeling that they were part of this laboring birth process. So as we saw last week, Maddie wasn't doing well in the tub. So she went from the tub to the bed where things moved really quickly. Cut to Mary coming in with Mariah and Audrey, and then they turned around and left, right? They were giggling and left. Now Mary looks at Janelle in the session at this point and says, Janelle, you were aware that I didn't know that any of you were in there. To which Janelle says, where would we have been, Mary? Yes, exactly. They haven't left that fucking room for 73 hours, Mary. Do you think they just all got up and decided to string some lights across the cul-de-sac? This is where Mary, once again, tries to use therapy speak, which Nancy must have told her, because she says, I'm sensing some defensiveness right now, Janelle. So there's more back and forth. And then Nancy asks, what role do they each take on as the kids get older? Now, Mary herself says she doesn't think she needs a role. Okay. And Christine suggests that maybe they just start by having lunch together, just talking, having fun. Lunch dates, ugh, says Janelle. No, Mary isn't fond of it either. We don't really hear what Robin thinks of it in the session, but Christine thinks that they just need to fake it till they make it. Now, Robin does say outside of the session, on her own, I'm tired of Mary not being invested in us. I'm sick and tired of it. I'm tired of her questioning our motives as sister wives. I'm just sick of this. I don't feel like there's anything I can do to fix it because I've tried. Well, color me friggin' shocked. I truly did not realize how pissed off Robin was at Mary. I thought they were the closest, or maybe they are the closest, but it's still that bad. And did anyone else realize up until this point that these four can't even handle a basic lunch together? I didn't think it was that bad. So Christine plans this lunch, and Mary, the cowardly lion, just stomps in. I don't have any expectations. I learned a long time ago not to have any expectations or hope for anything, so we'll see. Well, you know, Mary, if you go in looking for the bad, you're gonna have a shitty time. And this learned a long time ago not to have expectations. Oh, you mean like the 5-bedroom house for one person, the wet bar and the B&B in Utah? She is such a selfish bitch. Now, the whole meal is so awkward. And although Janelle is reserved, she's not rolling her eyes and doing this pouty thing that Mary is doing. You know, maybe if these women ordered some cocktails, a glass of wine instead of hot chocolate in the middle of fucking Las Vegas, they'd lighten the hell up. Now, the only thing that lightens Mary up is Parowan. And that's where she's headed because she's going to put in a formal offer to the owner, Vicky. Surprise, surprise. The family doesn't know I'm doing this today. I'm going to keep it close to me. And once I have something hard and fast, I'll tell them. Funny. Last time Mary had something hard and fast, she sent those photos of herself deep-throating a banana and called it a catfish. Now, we all know Mary is buying this house as her next personal home, right? She even says she can see herself living there. There's no plans yet, but it makes her all around happy. So Vicky puts her John Henry on the papers, and Mary puts her own John Henry too. Now, I was side-eyeing this because I know this phrase as, you know, you put your John Hancock, your signature, but I looked it up to be sure. So I looked it up on this site called Grammarist, and saying put your John Henry is called the cowboy version of the saying. So unfortunately, we got to let this one pass. But before we go, we get the final scene of Mary going over to Christine's house. This confrontation was just a mess. Two women with two personalities, two totally different communication styles. Christine, I know this is not the consensus, but I really like her nowadays. I think she's honest. She may not be nice and super sweet, but she's honest. She tells Mary that if it were up to her, she would not have wanted her in the room when Madison gave birth anyway, because Mary brings in a heavy energy when she enters a room. She also says she doesn't know what to say or do when she's sensing Mary is upset, like at the lunch. This is where Mary says, I'm not upset. Don't tell me my feelings. You're interpreting upset, but it's really me protecting myself because guarded. I'm guarded. Walls up. Guarded, guarded, guarded. I think Christine was being calm and trying to be understanding. She was saying, like, look, I need to know what I can say to you when I feel like you are upset or hurt or sad, like something we can both say and feel safe in saying how we feel. Now, this went back and forth, and I have the whole conversation verbatim because, well, let's face it, I'm a glutton for punishment, especially the sister wives fashion, but I have to stick to my core belief that Mary is laying the groundwork for getting the hell out of Dodge. This season was supposed to be the last, but TLC announced that there will be another season. So I'm going to hope and pray that this includes what I think is Mary's inevitable plan to retreat to the Parowan house, and then there's going to be a backlash of the other wives and Cody hearing and watching Mary put that offer into Vicky without their knowledge this week. Oh, I cannot wait. And now, the show I love and adore, third in line after my love for Real Housewives of New York and then OC, The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Teddy calls Dorit to apologize, and freaking Dorit is such a bitch. Why didn't you say you're sorry tomorrow? Oh, okay, so now Teddy is supposed to know how and when you like your apologies delivered, Dorit. She's not like one of your nannies delivering your children to you when it's time to film a scene. Freaking Dorit. And what is this reputation that she claims Teddy is sullying? I highly doubt Dorit even knows what that means. She probably thinks someone is saying you look like Sully from Monsters, Inc. in one of her Walmart swimsuits. So now Teddy is going to go meet Kyle for lunch. And whoa, Teddy's makeup. I don't know if that was contouring she was trying to do or a bad color blush, but Mr. Reality TV rarely, if ever, pipes in about these ladies, but he looked up at the TV, did a double take, and then he goes, oh, is she covering up a bruise? Are they talking to her about like getting beat up or something? Teddy, you're doing it wrong if a stranger thinks an intervention is needed when they look at your face. And this is coming from a man that has never, in all of our years being married, noticed when I completely changed my hair color or cut 6 inches off my hair. So while Mr. Real TV was calling a hotline number, I was focused on Teddy eating. I swear to you, she had one lentil on her fork at one point. Who the hell eats abine when they're eating a salad? Well, I'll tell you who, a skinny person. Because if I was there and Bravo was comping that lunch, I would have been ordering a salad just for starters, probably followed by a crab cake because I'd love a good crab cake, and there definitely would have been a dessert to split. And speaking of ordering, what is going on with this Arnold Palmer thing this season? I noticed Kyle and I forgot who else, but earlier in the season, it's been 2 or 3 times before that people have ordered an Arnold Palmer. And then again at this lunch, and then again, Lisa Rinna's mom orders one later. Does someone have royalties on Arnold Palmers? I've never been with anyone in my life who's actually ordered one at a restaurant. I'm starting to wonder, like, maybe someone is going to be releasing a line of drinks and this is their little segue into it. These are some thirsty ladies, literally and figuratively. And before I forget, at this lunch, LVP calls and her dog named Pink Dog died. More on that in a bit. Now, Erica Jane, I'm going to announce my party affiliation. Please don't hate me. As with every season of Real Housewives, opinions may change, but I am not digging Erica anymore. I said this privately on Patreon. I think she's pulling a Siggy Flicker. She's starting to believe her own hype. However, it comes off condescending and over the top. And this inspiring young girl stuff, come on, Erica. You married rich. You got lucky. End of story. Your talent and performing career isn't pulling a profit. The money that your husband spends on you and your entourage, your minions, it exceeds anything you'd be lucky to earn. Just be a little humble. It would be a much better look on you. And speaking of looks, this season's outfit choices, no. As Erica herself has said at one point, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Now let's jump to Kyle's psychic party. What the hell was that? My favorite part was seeing Glenn with two N's. He appears to have slimmed down, also gotten some Botox in his armpits because he is a lot less sweaty, and I think it's working for him. Kyle, on the other hand, I'm not sure what she was wearing. I know that it probably cost more than my car, but I'm not sorry. It was hideous. It was a circus tent from the 70s. The colors clashed in a vertical stripe from head to toe on anyone, let alone 15 of them wrapped around your body. It was enough to make Mauricio dizzy enough to forget to put his agency hat on. Well, here comes some sort of paired and cured meat appetizer that I could have eaten the whole tray of. And also enters Rebecca the psychic. This woman thinks that Heaven calls her on her phone. So whichever one of you has been pranking her landline for the past 20 years, I love you. Email me, Jody@RealTVPodcast. You are the best salty, sneaky chick, and we need to be best friends. Now, those of you on Patreon know about my session with an angel whisperer. I was 100% a skeptic until I talked to this woman. But comparing Rebecca to my experience with an angel whisperer, Rebecca is full of shit. I bet I could say right now, okay, guys, listen to me. I'm talking to you. I'm sensing someone with an M name, like a Michael, Martin, Michelle. Okay, I bet each of you can think of someone in your life or someone who has passed that kind of sort of matches that, just like this name Francis matched with Rinna. Now, after this brief reading, is that what you call it, psychic reading, whatever it was, in this sushi that no one freaking ate outside, again, if I were there, people would be like, where's the fatty? Where's Jody? Oh, she's just making out with the sushi chef, trying to get some free California rolls. But these ladies, starving, head inside to the lilac dining room of doom that Faye Resnick decorated a few years ago. There's crystals and stuff, and the psychic starts saying she senses John Lennon, and Dorit loses her goddamn mind because PK loves John Lennon. Yeah, Dorit, so does Yoko Ono and the rest of the fucking planet, you twit. Well, Becky with the really bad psychic hair, what else you got? Well, Kyle's mom, Big Kathy, is still a controlling bitch in the afterlife. And that's comforting. Dorit and PK made people roll their eyes back in 1900 Greece, even then. And Lisa Vanderpump, I'm seeing three dogs because you mentioned them in your Twitter, which I just checked on my phone sitting in front of me. This woman is full of shit. Now, Erica, I'm sensing Spain. Well, maybe because Erica has said multiple times on this show that she's traveled here, there, around the world. Well, no, because Erica was a little boy prince who was captured in the bottom of a ship and a knight came and saved her. Okay, come the frick on. I am going to go into Ancestry.com archives tonight. I have a membership, don't mean to brag. And I'm going to find some sort of historical evidence for a Spanish prince kidnapping. Don't believe it. For a person who claims to be so smartly cynical and worldly, Erica sure is gullible. Now, with the Teddy thing, she had a friend who fell off a horse, who she completely forgot about. But yet this friend, this dead friend, lives at her beach house on the deck. Yeah, she's not with her grieving parents or family. She's more of a Malibu ghost. So stupid. Now, next week, the ladies head to Berlin, where Erica is going to pay to lip sync somewhere. So I'm anxious to see what Mikey has in store for her and what contagious accent Dorit will pick up. So that does it for the podcast this week. Please remember to leave a 5-star written review on iTunes. That's how to get me some more loving on iTunes and spread the snarky love. Bonus episodes are on patreon.com/realityvpod, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Come talk to me @realityvpod. And until next time, stay salty.